Talk Africa. The continent has seen a decline in the number of authoritarian regimes since the 80s, but still, the number of democracies has not increased significantly. A report card on democracy on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the sunny side of sports. Let's begin with the 12th African Games in Rabat, Morocco. That's where Raymond Akevwo of Nigeria and Marie-Josée Talou of Ivory Coast earned the right to be called the fastest man and the fastest woman in Africa. Akevwo is a student at the University of Florida here in the United States. He powered his way to victory in the men's 100 meters dash, clocking 9.96 seconds. Now, this was the first time Akevwo has run under 10 seconds, and he barely missed the African Games record of 9.95 seconds set by fellow Nigerian Deji Aliyu at the 2003 Games in Abuja. In the women's 100 meters, Marie-Josée Talou, who we heard from on Tuesday's show, successfully defended her African Games title with a time of 11.09 seconds. Her main rival, the Nigerian Blessing Okagbare, was missing from the race after being disqualified for a false start the day before. Ethiopia won gold medals in the women's 800 meters and the men's 10,000 meters races. Hirit Meshesha had a winning time of 2 minutes and 3.16 seconds in the women's 800 meters. And Berahanu Wendimu won the men's 10,000 meters in 27 minutes and 56.81 seconds. Meanwhile, African Games records were set in the men's shot put and the women's pole vault. In the shot put, the Nigerian Chukwu Abuka Enekwechi set a new African Games record with a toss of 21 meters 48. And in the women's pole vault, Dora Mafoudi set a Tunisian record and a new games mark by clearing 4 meters 31. In other track and field results at the 12th African Games, Rose Yeboah of Ghana set a new personal best and won the gold by clearing 1 meter 84 in the women's high jump. There were 2 gold medals for Burkina Faso. African record holder Hugues Fabrice Zango won the men's triple jump with a distance of 16 meters 88. And in the women's hammer throw, another athlete from Burkina Faso, Latisha Bambara, had a winning throw of 65 meters 28. There were also 2 gold medals for Algeria in men's athletics. Amine Bouanani won the men's 110-meter hurdles final in 13.60 seconds. And Larbi Borata won the 10-event decathlon with 6,073 points. Wednesday will be another busy day in athletics at the African Games with 10 finals scheduled. In 2 results from Wednesday, Kenya had reason to cheer in the men's and women's 20-kilometer walk events, sweeping the gold medals. Emily Ngi won the women's race in 1 hour, 34 minutes, and 41 seconds. And Samuel Gatimba won the men's race in 1 hour, 22 minutes, and 48 seconds. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Sunday Adeleye is the technical director of the Athletics Federation of Nigeria. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Sunday said Team Nigeria has a chance of winning more medals in the remaining track and field events in Rabat.
Well, so far we have 3 gold, 3 silver, and then 1 bronze.
Are there chances for Team Nigeria in the remaining track and field events?
For sure. You know, we lost out in the women's 100 meters where Blessing was disqualified because of the foul start in the 100 meters women. But of course, in the 100, we made up in the 100 meters men where Raymond came in to win with a 9.96 to win the 100 meters. So we have gold there, and then Ishe came out bronze in that same 100 meters. So, of course, we have the 200 meters left where Divine Oduduru will be running, and then we have a lot of field events. And, of course, they will have the long jump, we have Ese Brume and so on and so forth. So we're very optimistic.
Can you tell us more about the new African king in the 100 meters, Raymond? Not many people seem to have heard the name. Can you tell us about him?
Well, if you go back to the interviews I've had with you, I told you, I said we have some new kids on the block that we'll try to keep away from the eye of the storm. And then we as part of our joker. So Raymond is part of those ones that are marked to pull out surprises or to spring surprises. He's a young chap and he's a student and then working very hard. Of course, in the 100 meters, Raymond has also actually qualified for the World Championship and the Olympics 2020 Tokyo.
Talking about the World Championship and the 2020 Olympics, can we say that the Athletics Federation of Nigeria has a good team that will represent the country in the two events?
Yeah, so far so good. We're doing very well. We have actually made athletes that will be coming out to run the open races, not just like before that we just have, for example, 100 meters, you have just the relays, and then maybe one or two athletes in the 100 meters or so. But like for in the 100 meters right now, we have at least 4 athletes that have made the Olympic standard and, of course, the World Championship standard in the 100 meters. So it goes on like that. So we're working, and then we believe that before the deadline for the closure for the Olympic qualifier, we have more and more athletes hit the standard.
That's Sunday Adeleye, the technical director of the Athletics Federation of Nigeria, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Rabat, Morocco.
Hi, my name is Sunday Adeleye, the technical director of Athletics Federation of Nigeria and the athlete representative on the board of Athletics Federation of Nigeria. I want to say a special shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you very much. Have a lovely day.
It's time to climb between the ropes once again with our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta. Good evening, Nnamdi.
And a good evening, Sonny.
Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua have a date, December 7th, and a venue, Saudi Arabia, for their world heavyweight title rematch. First off, Nnamdi, how did this fight end up in Saudi Arabia?
Andy Ruiz decided that he wants to fight Anthony Joshua on a neutral ground. And there's a reason why that happened. Dillian White, the heavyweight from the UK, fought Oscar Rivas, a Cuban heavyweight, July 20 at the O2 Arena for the WBC interim heavyweight title. Dillian White tested positive for banned substance 3 days before the fight. The British Boxing Board of Control allowed that fight to go on, and they were accused of being very impartial. And not only that, the gloves were switched at the last minute. So Andy Ruiz and his team decided that there was no way they're going to get a fair shake when they fight Anthony Joshua in the UK And that's how they backed out of the fight going into Cardiff Principality Stadium in December.
Namdi, you mentioned this neutral Saudi ground. Who does it favor?
It favors nobody, Sonny. This venue, British boxing fans will find it very difficult to fly to Saudi Arabia. American boxing fans are not going to fly to Saudi Arabia. We're going to deal with logistics and issues and human rights issues. Is there even a boxing commission in Saudi Arabia? Mind you, they've had two fights in the past, a World Boxing Series and Americans fight. But you can't compare the magnitude of this fight, the heavyweight fight, and those two fights. So it does not favor Anthony Joshua. It does not favor Andy Ruiz. It's definitely a neutral ground. And I'm still upset. I'm not the only one upset. Even the British boxing fans are upset that their own champion cannot even have what we call home cooking at the Cardiff Principality Stadium. And all this is done because of money.
What kind of money are we talking about for the rematch?
Well, the government of Saudi Arabia has put down a side fee of $100 million, Sonny. So if you break it down, $100 million coming from the government of Saudi Arabia, another $60 million coming from DAZN and a sponsorship and all the other stuff, this fight is worth more than $250 million. So this was about the career high price for Anthony Joshua, a mega payday for the promoter. Just the fans were just left out in the cold in the UK.
Namdi, you mentioned possible logistical problems with this AJ Ruiz rematch. I understand the stadium isn't even ready yet.
Sonny, that is Saudi Arabia for you. You know, they have what we call the Boku money. Boku money, you can erect a stadium in 60 days. They won the fight. They won the whole world to see the fight. They've started construction of the stadium. The stadium will be ready by December 7th, and the whole world will see it. So forget about money or making decisions. These cats, they make decisions right away. They are loaded with billions of dollars. The stadium will be ready. I guarantee you that.
The Saudis do have restrictions on alcohol. Will you be able to get a beer at the rematch?
You know better than that, Sonny. If you don't plan to be sober, you better stay where you are, you know. You know, boxing goes with beer. Boxing goes with beautiful women, you know. How are we going to do this during fight week? You cannot have your Budweiser. You cannot have your whiskey. If you do and you get drunk and you get on the street and you stumble and you fumble, you'll be dealt with immediately. This is a different arena. You must respect the culture of this country.
Will women be allowed to go to the rematch?
Women will be allowed to go to the rematch. And majority of the fans that will come out for this fight will be the Saudi Arabians. Few boxing fans from the UK. I don't know anybody flying in from California or USA to Saudi Arabia to see this.
What about visas, Namdi? Do you see possible problems there?
It will not be easy, but the promoter just said recently, Eddie Hearn, that if you buy tickets to the fight, automatically you get a visa. And we're not even talking about only visa, we're talking about weather. You know, this one is called the Clash on the Dunes, like you had a rumble in the jungle in Congo, Tree Line Manila. This one is called a Clash on the Dunes. Will the dunes be very hot for both guys? Anthony Joshua's last fight, we talked about stamina, Sonny. You remember? How do you take a man who's been dealing with stamina issues into a place where it's going to be at least 100 degrees? But some people are saying, well, December and January in Saudi Arabia is the coolest month. Well, coming from the UK, it could be a coolest month. But coming from California, from Andy Ruiz, may be a blessing.
So you think it'll be necessary for Ruiz and AJ to acclimate before the fight?
Must be in town at least a good 3 weeks before the fight to get your body in shape, to get your body in position, to go from your hotel room straight to the arena, or go from your hotel room straight to the training camp. Hanging around the street and all the stuff could be bad for the fighter.
You talk about getting your body in shape, Namdi. Can you talk about the training so far for AJ and Ruiz?
Andy Ruiz has not been training, Sonny. He's been living large. You know, he lives right here in Los Angeles. And if you are the heavyweight champion of the world, and you have three belts, he just put down $450,000 for a Rolls Royce Bentley, Sonny. You don't expect the world champion to be cruising the streets of Hollywood Boulevard on a Toyota Corolla. He's been living large. He's not been training. But, Sonny, come on now. For their last fight, he only had 5 weeks to prepare. So if we're talking about December, we're now basically in September. So we have the whole of September, the whole of October, November. By December 7th, if it's well done, both camps will be in the best shape of their life.
And I know you've talked about it on the show before, Namdi, but for a top fight like this, you don't want to peak too early. You have to really take your training camp seriously in terms of the time frame.
Sonny, that's a very good point you just mentioned. You know, we talked about Anthony Joshua bringing in a new conditioning coach. You remember he was gassed in the last fight, Sonny?
Mm.
That is the job of a conditioning coach, to know when to peak, to know when to pull back, to know when to step it up. Because if you don't know how and when to do these things, come fight night, you have nothing left in the ring. You'll be out of gas. So timing is very important. That's why a top-class conditioning coach must be acquired for Anthony Joshua.
Has AJ made the necessary changes, Namdi, for this rematch? I know you said he needs to change his corner.
No, Sonny, which kind of surprised a lot of people. I am shocked myself. Rob McCracken, his trainer, who has been with him since his amateur days, is still in charge. They need to bring in another trainer to help. Sonny, go back and look at the last fight. Go back and hear the instructions from his trainer in the corner. It's all about jab, 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 jab. Look at Andy Ruiz's corner. Strategy, you got to have strategy. You can't stand there and get hit with the same shot over and over. If you don't know how to adjust, that is the job of the trainer. When you come back into the corner, you back into the room, he must adjust things. But if the trainer is still the same and is doing the same thing, whoa, December 7th, there better be some adjustments.
Come December 7th, I understand we might see a sleeker, more trim AJ?
The pictures we're seeing right now, it looks totally different from the Anthony Joshua we saw at Madison Square Garden. I hope he can come down to at least 220, not anything above 230. He must be a mobile heavyweight come December 7th. He just cannot stand there and allow Andy Ruiz to come inside and run combination and break his ribs, you know. He must have a stiff jab, put combinations together, 1, 2, 3, double the jab and maybe drop the big right hand. Remember one thing, Sonny. He was the first one to drop Andy Ruiz in the first fight. Mm. He's got the first knockdown. He needs to work on defense. He needs to work on stamina. He needs to work on combination. He needs to be mobile like Tyson Fury.
And speaking of Tyson Fury, Namdi, how about an update on the Gypsy King and the WBC champ, Deontay Wilder?
Tyson Fury keeps fighting the Uber drivers. He's got another Uber driver from Europe, man. This is the second Uber driver he's fighting. Do you blame him? You don't blame him because they see the big picture. The big picture is a rematch with Deontay Wilder. And guess who Deontay Wilder is fighting in November? He's fighting a guy he knocked out in Luis Ortiz, the Cuban fighter. Why did Anthony Joshua have to go tangle with Andy Ruiz? All they needed to do was give Anthony Joshua a stay busy fight and get ready for the mega fight with Deontay Wilder. Now we see Tyson Fury fighting an Uber driver, Deontay Wilder fighting a guy he knocked out before. Will you not be mad at Anthony Joshua's promoter? I am pissed off, Sonny, with Anthony Joshua promoter Eddie Hearn.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta. And we'll hear more hard-hitting boxing commentary from Namdi later this week. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Turning to tennis, a rising young American star has won her opening match at the U.S. Open in New York. Joining us now with more details is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. On Tuesday, teen sensation Coco Gauff made her U.S. Open debut in an amazing come-from-behind battle against Russian Anastasia Potapova. The 15-year-old seemed to be headed for defeat after she lost the first set, and her game was broken early in the second, but she gained momentum to ultimately win the match and a spot in the second round. Afterwards, Gauff was asked how she was able to turn the match around.
After the first set, I was like, I kind of have to reset and just stop thinking about what will happen after the match and just think about what I need to do to win the second set.
Gauff became a household name after reaching the final 16 at Wimbledon this year and was handed a wild card entry into the U.S. Open tournament. Gauff compared the crowd response at Flushing Meadows to that of her opening match at Wimbledon.
It was different because at Wimbledon, my first match, I mean, people were still rooting for me, but obviously there was some, like, a lot of people rooting for Venus. So with this match, it was entirely for me. And, like, I think this was my first match where people actually had a chant for me. So that was pretty cool.
Well, all eyes will be on Gauff when she plays her second round match against Hungary's Tamia Babos on Thursday. Defending champion Naomi Osaka pulled off a three-set victory against Russian Anna Blinkova despite committing 50 unforced errors in her opening match. Afterwards, Osaka said she needs to work on her consistency, and her shaky start was due to a bad case of nerves.
I felt nervous. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's definitely a new feeling. Never had to come into a tournament come into a Grand Slam. I mean, I went to Indian Wells once. So I did feel like that gave me a little bit of practice, but the amount of nerves that I felt today was completely different than in California. So I'm kind of really glad that's over.
Well, we'll see if Osaka can shake it off Thursday when she's set to face Poland's Magda Linette in the second round. Wimbledon champion Simona Halep also eked out a three-set victory against American Nicole Gibbs. Halep is on a quest to become the first woman since Serena Williams in 2012 to follow up a Wimbledon title with a U.S. Open trophy. She'll continue that quest in her second round match against American Taylor Townsend, also on Thursday. Last year, three times U.S. Open champion Rafael Nadal succumbed to a knee injury that forced him to retire from the tournament in the semifinals. But on Tuesday, he cruised into the second round with a straight set win over Aussie John Millman. Nadal's game seemed to get better and better as the match went on, but he says he needs to rest up before facing his next wild card opponent, Australian Tanasi Kokkinakis.
He's young, he has a big forehand, big serve. He's a dangerous opponent, of course. I need to go on court and to play well. If not, will be a very difficult match. So let's see. I think I had more or less positive feelings tonight. I need to keep improving every single day, but winning with that result allow me tomorrow to have a good practice, and I hope we're ready for after tomorrow, knowing that is a tough challenge to meet Tanasi in the second round.
That match will be played on Thursday, and I want to also mention American Francis Tiafoe has also advanced to the second round. He'll next face Alexander Zverev of Germany. At this year's Wimbledon tournament, world number 87 Thomas Fabiano pulled off a shocker with his victory over Greek Stefanos Tsitsipas in the first round. Well, on Tuesday, the Italian scored a second shocker when he toppled Austria's Dominic Thiem in a surprise opening round upset. Fabiano is into the second round, where he'll face Russian Alexander Bublik. And speaking of Stefanos Tsitsipas, after battling it out for nearly 4 hours, he suffered another first-round defeat against unseeded opponent Andrei Rubli of Russia. Tsitsipas struggled on serve and made a total of 81 unforced errors. Afterwards, he admitted he lacks inspiration and said
His brain can't take it anymore. Rubli is set to face Thomas Fabiano in second-round action on Thursday. We'll bring you those results and scores from Wednesday's matches that will feature Roger Federer, Novak Djokovic, and the Williams sisters. There's much, much more tennis news to come, so stay tuned. Sonny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I encourage our VOA listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see a photo of Iron Mike Mbonye, who we heard from earlier in the show, and Ike Diogu, the captain of Nigeria's national men's basketball team, nicknamed the Tigers. Ike and the Tigers are getting ready for the FIBA Basketball World Cup, which tips off Saturday in China. And that wraps up the August 28th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Rob McLean. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the continent has seen a decline in the number of authoritarian regimes since the 80s, but still, the number of democracies has not increased significantly. A report card on democracy on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers who have been reviewing observation data from the Kepler spacecraft have occasionally been treated to pyrotechnic displays they call superflares. These superflares are incredibly powerful bursts of high-energy radiation that are being blasted from relatively young and active stars. Scientists say superflares are hundreds to thousands of times more powerful than the largest recorded flares from our own sun. A team of astronomers say they have found evidence that suggests stars as old as our 4.6 billion year old sun can produce superflares once every few thousand years. They said if the sun should produce a superflare, Earth would be bathed in a blast of high energy radiation. This could disrupt various electronic devices around the world, cause widespread power blackouts, and take orbiting communication satellites out of commission. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have